Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Sunday, January 13, 2019. Welcome back to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting. Matt Norlander is here with me, and it's a pretty wild weekend for the sport. Cam Reddish hit a wide-open three-pointer in the final seconds to lift Duke past Florida State on Saturday. Zion Williamson got hit in the eyeball in the first half, didn't play in the second half, said he had double vision. Regardless, Duke still wins, and that was really just one of many impressive road victories this weekend. Tennessee won at Florida. Virginia smashed Clemson at Clemson. Gonzaga won at San Francisco. Kansas survived at Baylor. Texas Tech won at Texas. Ole Miss won at Mississippi State to improve to 13-2. Kansas State won at Iowa State. And we're going to get to some of that, maybe most of that, in this episode eventually. But I wanted to start with the most impressive road win of the weekend, or at least the most surprising, and that was Louisville's 83-62 win at number 12, North Carolina. Chris Mack's Cardinals were 11-point underdogs in Chapel Hill, win by 21. It's not every day you see a double-digit underdog win by 20, but it happened on Saturday. And now UNC has got one of the weirdest bodies of work in the sport of college basketball. The Tar Heels have beaten Gonzaga at home, beaten NC State on the road, beaten Wofford on the road. And let me pause for a second and recognize the Wofford Terriers. You might remember on a previous podcast, Norlander was erect about UNC's season opening win at Wofford. Said it would be a quadrant one win. And at the time, Wofford was 118th at KenPom. And considering Wofford had never finished in the top 80 at KenPom, like ever, I basically said Norlander was being cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. But look now, Wofford's 14-4. Only losses are to North Carolina, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Mississippi State. And the Terriers are currently ranked 41st at KenPom and 33rd in the net. So UNC's win at Wofford right now is a quad one win. Shouts to Mike Young and his Terriers. Awesome so far. Shouts to you, Norlander. You really nailed it on Wofford.
Well, I appreciate that. If I had the time, desire, means, or frankly, the ego, which I hope I don't, I would actually, after we're done doing this pod, I would go grab the clip from that episode, just kind of splice it right as you started what you said about 45 seconds ago, have replay when you ran down Wofford's history at KenPom over the previous 16 years when you were riding that wave as high as you possibly could. And
yeah. I don't get that insistent about many things, but I was pretty sure. I was like, dude, if you're now telling me Wofford's going to do something it's never done. But that is exactly what's happening. Wofford is doing something it's never done. Again, to jump from like 118 at KenPom to where are they again?
41? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a massive jump. And so, again, impressive stuff. And really, you know, in that league right now, there's four teams that got like 14 or 15 wins. So that's a strong lead. And I wonder if Wofford were to win out, maybe lose in its conference title game, if it would still be able to be in play for an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. Like, could that league be a two-bid league if the at-large is Wofford? Because the computers are going, if Wofford does what I say, it could do, which is win out, then maybe lose in a championship game, the computers would say that Wofford's good enough to be under consideration for an at-large bid. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. Back to North Carolina. Like I said, North Carolina has perhaps the weirdest body of work in the country. Home win over Gonzaga, road wins at NC State and Wofford, neutral court win over UCLA. That's the good. The bad is a neutral court loss to a Texas team that's 10-6 with losses to Radford, Providence, and Oklahoma State. A neutral court loss to a Kentucky team that's just 4-3 against KenPom's top 100. And then, of course, Saturday's 21-point loss at home to a Louisville team that was coming off a loss to Pitt. It was Roy Williams' worst home loss ever at UNC. North Carolina is now 12-4 in Orlando. What do you make of the bipolar Tar Heels?
They are bipolar, and I agree with you. I've lost track of what I was, to a certain extent, what I was writing and tweeting about in real time as Saturday played out. But I think I mentioned UNC, I think. I mentioned some team's weird resume, and I believe it was Carolina, because they've got some good quad one wins. They are accumulating a lot. I don't think they've lost a game outside of the quadrant one sector at this point in the season. And Yes, definitely down the road. Let's circle back on the SoCon and the teams involved there, because I think the SoCon, hashtag two-bid SoCon, could be a thing this year, because it'll also help Wofford if it can stay quad one. I believe that stuff like this has an impact on the committee, where if it gets referenced in the media podcast in the committee room that Wofford was a quadrant one opponent, I think it actually would help their case if they didn't get in and say Furman, Greensboro, East Tennessee State got it. Anyway, we'll deal with that down the road. SoCon is definitely possible.
Let me get details on that real quick. Wofford 14-4, East Tennessee State 15-4, UNC Greensboro 15-3, Furman 15-3. They're all in the top 125 at KenPom, and all in the top 125 at KenPom, and Wofford's now in the top 40. So they've moved up two spots today somehow.
Crazy.
From when I took my notes earlier today. So it really could be a two-bid league. That's not the craziest thing in the world. Go ahead.
It can be, and I'd love to see it. Furman's got, we talk about UNC's weird resume. Furman's also got one because their non-con for the most part isn't that good, but they've got really notable wins, and like Loyola Chicago beating Illinois State over the weekend. Like, Furman needs Loyola Chicago to run through the Missouri Valley to help its case as best it can. On the Friday podcast upcoming, let's make sure to give the Furman at Wofford game a little bit of preview love as well, because that would be a very big game within that league. Wofford's yet to take a loss, and Furman could really use that win. As for UNC, don't know what to make of the team. Still rates in a healthy way across multiple advanced metrics. KenPom obviously being the most notable one and ever referenced on this podcast. It's still number 10 heading into Monday morning, despite being a four-loss team. And it's ranked ahead of one-loss Nevada. It's ranked ahead of one-loss Buffalo, three-loss Florida State. It's 10 spots ahead of three-loss Oklahoma. Maryland's not within sniffing distance right now. NC State, which UNC has a win over and only has two losses. North Carolina's still 15 spots ahead. And we are almost at the point, it gets to about mid-January, so maybe about 6 to 10 days from now, when all of the preseason factors that go into the KenPom algorithm, those get tossed out, and all of the rankings are purely related to data from this season alone. So Carolina's got a little bit, just a little bit, a dash of it, of the preseason factoring in. But I still think, if you tossed all that out, it would rate as a top 15, top 16 team overall. And it's, I don't know. I like them, but I don't like them. What I saw on Saturday, and that was obviously an early tip, the first of a couple games to watch there at noon. Good on Louisville for rebounding. And I believe, if I'm right, Parrish, we're now doing weekend picks on the site. So five games, five notable games, pick it up straight up against the spread. You, like me, did have Louisville covering, right?
Yeah, I just felt like, I think Louisville's worst loss all season was by 13 points, and they've got multiple overtime losses. Like, they've been pretty competitive with just about anybody, even if the record isn't great. And it's a basketball game. I could certainly see North Carolina beating them by 20, but I felt like if you were going to give me Chris Mack and what I think it was 11 points or 12 points.
Yeah.
At when we made the pick was 11 or 12. You're going to give me Chris Mack with 11 or 12 points against a North Carolina team that had already been a little all over the place, even if they were coming off a big win at NC State. I was just going to take the point. For once, I was right.
I agree. And that, for me, it was more about Louisville having a poor performance prior to that and Mack being vocal about it. They just, they lose against Pitt, and they didn't get blown out or anything, but if you watch that game, just Louisville gave away some opportunities. I thought they were going to rebound strong. I thought UNC was going to win, but I thought it was going to win around 5 or 7 points. No, Louisville wins by 21, and Carolina, it has these lapses defensively. Naz Little was not quality whatsoever, continues to struggle. So I think it was two pods ago, GP, where you had mentioned that you thought Carolina would have a shot at I feel like everything that you're talking about on the podcast this season, you know what, just write it in pencil, and then in a figurative sense, we're just going to erase it 2-3 episodes later. Like, do you still stick with your previous opinion? And granted, this is only, GP, this is only one loss in the league, but are you sticking with that you consider UNC as likely to finish atop the league as Duke and Virginia? Because that was your stance a mere 4 or 5 days ago.
Well, let's make sure we know exactly what it is I said. I said Duke and Virginia were clearly the best two teams in that league, and I did not put North Carolina in their class. But because of the way the schedule was set up, with this unbalanced ACC schedule, they I can't remember the details. I think maybe I'll remember if I look at it here. At the time, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 top 20 or 25 KenPom teams. And Duke had to play, I think, 4 of them on the road. Virginia had to play 4 of them on the road. And North Carolina only had to play 2 of them on the road. And one of them was already in the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
And so my point was, no, North Carolina is not as good as Duke or Virginia, but North Carolina might finish right up there with Duke and Virginia based on the way the schedule is laid out.
Still possible, by the way, but as I said, Carolina's weird, and the ACC can just create scenarios, results, and patterns that we wouldn't expect. And maybe there's balance here. Like, you think maybe UNC would have lost or should have lost at UNC, at NC State, sorry, and then it comes home and it loses at Louisville. So it's 1-1 in that, but the way it lost at Louisville is also concerning overall. Talent-wise, I mean, the team is still good, but can you trust UNC? I guess that's what I left Saturday after I watched that game. Can you trust this team? And I think it's gonna just have to take a while if we're ever going to get there. Doesn't mean that they won't win, or you shouldn't necessarily put a few pounds or coins on them, and occasionally if you're feeling good. But in the big picture, can you trust this team? I don't think you can say yes to that in any way right now.
Well, it's weird because they do have massive wins. Like I said, the win at Gonzaga, the win at NC State. But Roy has never liked this team, or he's never talked positively about this team. Earlier in the season, it was like, we stink, I stink, this is the worst coaching job of my career. And after Saturday's loss, he was asked what the problem was, and he said that. And then he had in a much more serious subject, he also had one of his spells on the sideline where he dropped to a knee and clearly lost balance, and he was fine quickly and fine after the game. But that's always scary. He sort of joked in the way Roy does afterward, like, I hope I don't die on the court when we're playing that badly. I want to die when we're playing well. But you know, every time you see a man his age, you know, like, have a moment like that, it is kind of, it's scary. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, it is. And we'll remind you that he recently, you know, a few months back, even though it only became public about a month ago, signed quite the long contract extension. So, and when I talked to him in Chicago, he was like, no, this is, you know, I'm feeling good. And that's probably true. I also think that Roy, like a lot of coaches, but Roy in particular, because he's been attached to these vertigo spells, and there's been shots of him occasionally over the years of just, like, you know, dropping to a knee. He gets, like, his blood will boil sometimes during a game. And I'm sure he's got a fine physician that talks to him about this stuff, and he might not be able to control it. When you're down 15 at home to Louisville, and you know you've got no business doing that, I think it's something that's a little bit hard to control. Doesn't mean that he shouldn't be trying better to do it, but at this point, it is part of the thing with Roy is, you know, he still wants to coach, he's active to coach, and I don't think that that his health should be put on trial, so to speak. But given the fact that we've seen that a few times over the years, every time it does come up, I think it's just something that is, for better or worse, it's just to attach to him right now. But outside of those moments, when you talk to him, prepping for games, offseason, whenever, I mean, he still looks active, lively, and ready to go. But I do think, you're right, because I think for the most part, he's willing to be bluntly honest with his team in a way that I think only a few other coaches at the major conference level are. And he loves his team, but he doesn't like his team, if you get what I'm saying. And how is he going to get to the point where he is truly satisfied with the group that he has here? And will they ever get there? Because if they don't, again, when can you trust this team?
For whatever it's worth, KenPom projects North Carolina to win 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in a row starting Tuesday against Notre Dame. So the schedule does lighten up a bit, but keep in mind, KenPom also projected them to beat Louisville by double digits, and that did not happen. So as always, we'll see. I mentioned Cam Reddish's buzzer-beating game winner. We're going to talk about that momentarily, but first, let me tell you about SeatGeek. Getting tickets online can be far too complicated with hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability. It's just hard to know who to trust, which is why SeatGeek is the way to go. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets all into one place so you can easily find the seats you want for a price you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever, and it really is simple. For example, my wife and I are going to Vegas later this month. We decided to go see Lady Gaga's show at the Park Theater at MGM. So I went to SeatGeek, typed in Lady Gaga, hit search, found the date of the show, and clicked it. Two clicks later, I was buying two tickets. And when I bought the tickets, I didn't have to worry about a thing because every SeatGeek purchase is fully guaranteed. So you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. And you can also shop via the SeatGeek app. It's the simplest, most convenient way to do it. I have the app on my phone. You should have the app on your phone too. So next time you need tickets to anything, a basketball game, football game, concert, Broadway show, anything, let SeatGeek help you. And don't forget to use promo code COLLEGEBB to get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's promo code COLLEGEBB for 10 bucks off your first SeatGeek purchase. At SeatGeek, life's an event. We have tickets.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third-row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. So Duke was 2.8 seconds away from losing at Florida State on Saturday, but then a replay gave the Blue Devils the ball under the FSU basket. Coach K designed to play for somebody other than Zion because Zion was out with double vision, did not play in the second half. Lots of misdirection, and then Trey Jones found Cam Reddish as open as you can possibly be. He thanked the shot. Duke wins 80-78. Improved to 14-1. Norlander, how did Cam Reddish get that wide open?
massive defensive lapse by Florida State because, one, expecting RJ probably to flare out for the ball. If not, Marquise Bolden, big boy down low, making a move toward the rim. Neither of those things happened. To me, Reddish hitting the three, awesome moment for him, and we can get to that in just a second, but him being that open and that big of a spot, despite the fact that he's a solid three-point shooter and takes more three-pointers than anyone on Duke's roster, I was a little surprised he didn't miss it because it is not a typical confluence of events. When you're taking a three-pointer or when you've got a big play just before time expires, you are expecting bodies to be around you. You are expecting to have to maybe fight through a screen. Your normal rhythm of motion and expectation isn't to be wide open with literally no one within arm's reach of you and more than that. He'll never have a shot, I think, that open again to win a game in his life, will Cam Reddish. It was intriguing to see the way that Duke packed the paint. Reddish was able to slip out. Terrence Mann lost him. I don't know if Trent Forrest was supposed to switch off there or not, but regardless, I don't even think it was like this elaborate set. Like it was a well-run set. Florida State totally got caught up. Whatever they and the subtext of this is this. There's a lot of things. Real quick, Reddish turns the ball over on the previous possession, then he fouls PJ Savoy on a three-point attempt. Savoy only makes two of the three, which ultimately doesn't wind up mattering with the score differential at the end of the game. But two no-nos for Reddish, right? And he had a solid game, but it's late in the game, and you're Cam Reddish, and you've been slumping lately. And here you go, you make two bad plays, and are you going to cost your team the game? Then Duke gets to the foul line. Bear gets to the foul line, makes the first, misses the second. It's a weird carom. Florida State tries to save it and throw it off Duke. Instead, it goes off Florida State. So Duke gets bailed out on that. shouldn't have even happened. How often do you see that kind of play happen? So Duke gets a second chance, and then Reddish's play unfolds the way that it does. Bada bing, bada bang, bada boom. Duke goes on to win. Florida State misses out on a huge opportunity. And for Reddish, I wrote a column on it, a quickie column at CBSSports.com. Feel free to go ahead and read it. I do think that that shot and that game, I don't know if it will, but I do think we could well look back once we get to March and say, the winner for Reddish at Florida State is where his season turned. He was up and down. Duke did not have a big four, maybe didn't even have a big three. It was Zion and RJ, and Reddish was just along for the ride. But since then, you can see his minutes have gone up. His shooting's improved. His scoring average improved. His draft stock, which is in flux, is now firmly again in that top 3 to 5 range. I think this possibly could do it, and for Duke to do it without Williamson available in the second half, big-time win for the Blue Devils.
Just a tremendous win, especially after Zion goes out, because you're not just on the road in a hostile environment, because basically every time Duke's on the road, it's going to be a hostile environment, but you're on the road in a hostile environment, your best player's out, and you're playing a good team. Like, Florida State's good and talented, and so to get out of there, especially when it looked like it was a loss. I mean, keep in mind, on the final play, that ball wasn't theirs, or at least it wasn't ruled theirs by the officials. So it looked, as we were watching it live, before we saw the replay, it looked like ball off of Duke, Florida State's got the ball with a lead, like a second left, game's over. Like, it looked for a moment, before we saw the replay, it was like, okay, Duke just took a loss. And then the replay shows quite clearly that the ball should belong to Duke, and then Duke runs the play, and Cam gets the wide open shot. And so, in some ways, it took what was momentarily perceived to be a Duke loss and flipped it into a Duke win, and again pushed them to 14-1. I imagine when the AP poll updates on Monday, they will maintain their spot above everybody else. So Duke is headed in one direction. Ohio State is a team headed in the other direction. The Buckeyes have gone from 12-1 to 12-4 because of a 3-game losing streak. They lost to Michigan State at home, then lost at unranked Rutgers, then lost at unranked Iowa. And the other loss from earlier in the season, it's a home loss to unranked Syracuse. So right now, Ohio State has 0 wins over top 30 KenPom teams. They're just 2-3 against the top 50, just 5-4 against the top 115. And I think Chris Holtmann would probably agree with this, that his Buckeyes were, and we're finding this out, probably never actually as good as maybe their 12-1 start made them look. Would you agree with that?
I do. I have to be honest here, though. You got out of that Duke topic quicker than I thought you were going to, because I had a trivia time to throw at you. So can I just quickly just – I got a trivia time that's related to the Zion stuff. I want to see if you can know it. It's music stuff. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. So Zion Williamson leaves the game with – this is so stupid. But I wanted to see if you had it, because I know some of the listeners will get it. So Zion Williamson leaves the game with double vision. By the way, he's expected to be fine in time for, I'm sure most of you are listening to this podcast on Monday, prior to Duke's game against Syracuse. Williamson should play for that game. His double vision apparently cleared up soon after the game ended. Double vision is also, I've had the song stuck in my head for basically a day because everyone kept saying double vision on Saturday. So do you know the band that had the hit Double Vision in the 1980s? Can you name the band?
Is it Foreigner?
Correct. Yeah, on the money. How did you know?
Because I can hum it. I think I can hum it.
Yeah.
Da, 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 you hum it.
Well, that's definitely not it. I mean.
Dun, 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 dun. She got double vision.
You know? Yeah. There you go.
I grew up with that stuff, you know?
Exactly. But it's not one of those, unless you're a Foreigner diehard, it's not one of their most well-known songs. And so I thought you might think it could have been Hall & Oates or somebody else, but you nailed it on the money. So good on you. Ohio State, other piece of trivia time, although I'm not going to ask it because I'm just going to point it out. Ohio State, its claim to not so much fame is in the debut version ever of the net rankings. It will forever be known as the team that was actually number one the first time the net rankings were publicly available and published, and that was earlier this season. They have since obviously had a big drop. Holtmann maintained all the while that he had some concerns with this team. I'll also say that Holtmann, I don't know if he tries to do this as a way of not reverse jinxing his team, but like he always plays down how good his teams are. This is just one of his things, his personality quirks. But behind the scenes, that staff has known that there are some shortcomings, and that's coming to roost a little bit. I still think Ohio State's going to wind up. He's a great coach. He's got a solid staff, and Wes and Caleb has been he's been pretty good overall. I think they'll still work their way into the NCAA tournament, but I think this kind of drop back was inevitable. Buckeyes will be, I don't know, maybe finish 7th or 8th in the Big Ten, if I had to guess right now. And that's still, in my opinion, going to be good enough, because I think the league is going to still send, I think the Big Ten will probably send 8 teams to the NCAA tournament.
Well, they were preseason Big Ten poll picked 8th. And when I talked to Chris in Chicago, I guess it was last month now, I mentioned you guys picked 8th in the Big Ten. He said, you know, 8th in the Big Ten is going to be pretty good. And I think that's true. Like, 8th in the Big Ten probably gets you to the NCAA tournament. But given that they started 12-1, you just don't expect a team that starts 12-1 with what appeared to be some quality road wins in there at the time. You don't expect them to then go on a 3-game losing streak, including a loss at Rutgers, but here we are. They were supposed to be something like a bubble team in the preseason, and maybe that's what they'll end up being, something like a bubble team. But the next 4 games for them are interesting. Maryland at home, Purdue at home, then at Nebraska, at Michigan. You'd probably take anything better than 1-3, wouldn't you?
You would, and Nebraska is a team that's really starting to rally. Nebraska and obviously Ole Miss, who we'll get to in a second here. You take that if you're Ohio State. Wait and see. I maintain that, like, even though Nebraska's starting to make some good strides, Maryland's starting to make some good strides, Indiana, we'll see. It still feels like a jumble to me for the most part, and I throw Ohio State into that mix. So there's plenty of intrigue around almost all the major conferences, almost all of them, not all of them, in college hoops. But for some reason, like, you know, Iowa, I said on the previous podcast, like, I can never get my arms around Iowa. Maybe that's a top 25 team. Maybe it's a top 40 team. I don't know. I want to watch the Big Ten almost nightly because – I don't have a firm grasp of at least half the league at this point. Maybe that'll still be the case a month from now, but I'm pretty firm on Ohio State not being a top 4 team in the league, but also not being as bad as it showed against Rutgers.
So check this out. It's a wild league because Michigan State and Michigan, I think, are clearly a level above everybody else. We could debate whether you think the Spartans or Wolverines are the best team in the Big Ten, but the debate starts and stops with them. After that, whether it's Maryland, Wisconsin, Purdue, Indiana, Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, Ohio State, that's 8 teams. I have had everyone – so Michigan and Michigan State have been in the top 25-1 from the preseason. They've obviously never dropped out. Those other 8, Maryland, Wisconsin, Purdue, Indiana, Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, Ohio State, have all been in and out of the top 25-1, which updates every day. So, like, you get movement, not every day, but you get movement more often than the typical once a week updates that people do. And so I think I've got right now Maryland in, Purdue in, Indiana in. But like a few days ago, I had Minnesota in, Wisconsin in, Nebraska in. I probably could have Iowa in right now. I think Iowa is probably my first team out. So they've got 2 really good championship contending teams in Michigan State, Michigan, and then a bunch of teams that are anywhere from 15 to 35 on any given day.
Yeah, that's why I think it's minimum 8 that go. 10's the top. I don't think that's going to happen. You'd have to have things break just right. I think 10 is a big ask, even though when you look around and you see, like, okay, the A-10, the Pac-12, the American, are those conferences going to be able to provide enough worthy teams? And if they don't, then who's picking up the slack? Well, maybe you get a 2-bid SoCon. Hashtag 2-bid SoCon. I'm all in on that. 10 for the Big Ten would be obviously clearly a record for that conference and knocking on the door of the all-time record of 11. But we'll see if we get real oil and water separation going forward. It's why sometimes, not sometimes, all the time, non-conference play can be so vital, because what your league does outside of its conference, and then if you get a situation like this where you've got a lot of good teams and they're just going to trade blows to the chin. You can't avoid this. Like, I'm really in on Maryland right now. I think Maryland is playing like a top 15 team in America. Very in on them. But I think because of the way the schedule just shakes out and where the league is, Maryland is going to have a dip back. It's going to go through a stretch where it either loses back-to-back games or loses 3 out of 6, and then it's going to slip back toward it. But I think at their strength, Maryland is a top four team in the Big Ten this season. I'm fully in on the way that roster has developed, but we just wait and see. I do still maintain that, as you mentioned, both Michigan schools are a tier apart.
But like Wisconsin is 3-2 in the league right now. Purdue 3-2, Indiana 3-2, Minnesota 3-2, Iowa 3-3, Nebraska 2-3, Ohio State 2-3. Basically, they've just been, you know, one beats one and then loses to the other and then beats somebody and then loses to the other. And if they keep that up all year long, and I know nobody wants to keep that up all year long, it's exhausting. But if they keep that up all year long, that is the best formula for maybe getting 9 or 10 teams in the NCAA tournament. You know, have Michigan State separated and have the next 8 just beat up on each other and like all finish, you know, around, you know, in that 9-9, 10-8 range, 8-10, 9-9, 10-8 range in the league. That'd be the best way for the Big Ten to get 10. I'm not ruling it out because I don't think there's very much difference between most of those teams. Again, as somebody who updates these rankings every day, I'm just shuffling 2 Big Ten teams out and shuffling 2 more in. It seems like all the time. You mentioned Ole Miss. They had a hell of a week. Beat Auburn on Wednesday night, then won at Mississippi State on Saturday. So now the same team that was picked last in the SEC is 13-2 overall, 3-0 in the SEC, ranked 14th in Sunday morning's top 25-1. Really a remarkable story. So for people who don't follow Ole Miss basketball, and that's probably just about everybody listening, Ole Miss went 12-20 last season under the combination of Andy Kennedy and Tony Madlock. AK resigns. Ole Miss hires Middle Tennessee's Kermit Davis, who had gone 5-1 against the SEC in his final 3 years at Murfreesboro. So Ole Miss is picked last in the preseason SEC poll, which like kind of made sense based on, you know, they were 12-20 last season and they didn't enroll on paper a difference maker, not a single top 100 prospect. So there was nothing crazy about picking them last given the data that was available. They started the season 97th at KenPom. Now they're 30th at KenPom. It's a 67-spot jump, and nobody else in the top 40 at KenPom started anywhere close to as low as where Ole Miss started this season. And now Kermit Davis Jr. has got a chance to do, in his first year in the SEC, the same thing Kermit Sr. did in his first year in the SEC. Kermit Davis Sr., for those who don't know, former Mississippi State head coach. And his first – that's why Kermit coaching at Mississippi State this weekend was interesting. Like, he grew up in that building. His father coached at the rival of his current employer. And so Kermit Davis Sr. Coaches at Mississippi State. His first season as head coach is the 1970-71 season. He wins SEC Coach of the Year. And I know it might be Rick Barnes' trophy to lose this season at Tennessee, but right now it is at least reasonable to suggest Kermit Davis Jr. could win SEC Coach of the Year in his first season in the league, just like Kermit Sr. did 48 years ago. That's pretty neat, right?
That's awesome. That is really, really cool. And I hope it happens. I mean, Barnes, yeah, particularly if Tennessee runs away with it, he's going to get it. But if it's in doubt, be it with Ole Miss or anyone else, given preseason expectations, give it to Kermit. The world needs more men named Kermit, by the way. This is an opinion that has been expressed on previous podcasts. I know that you share it with me, Parrish. How about this? Terrence Davis needs to be recognized for how well he has played. This is his senior season, has made a huge jump in his shooting overall. 56% from two-point range, 42% from three. Those are very, very big jumps from where he was a year ago, pretty much across the board and everything that he's doing, from usage to how effective he is shooting, distributing, defending. There are other players that are, you know, Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield, I think, lead the class at this point for SEC Player of the Year. I get that. But right now, I think I'd have Terrence Davis third, maybe fourth at worst, and we'll see if he can keep that up. And Ole Miss isn't just him, but I wanted to put a face to what the program and the team has done outside of just Kermit, because I watched all of that game, and Davis has been he's been awesome. Just it's kind of paid his dues, and now in his senior season has stepped up even more so, deserving of some shine. And Ole Miss, believe it, people, on pace to make the NCAA tournament, and it would take something weird at this stage not to get there. And a week ago, Parrish, I thought they were not playing in the NCAA tournament. My mind's changed. They're going to take losses. It's inevitable. There are better teams in the SEC than them. I get that. But I think at worst, this is a top five team in the SEC. It's just, I don't know. I don't foresee the situation where it gets so bad it's not in the tournament. I think it's going to get there.
Terrence Davis, that's a South Haven High School graduate. You know who else is a South Haven High School graduate?
Well, I don't think it's you because I think that you went to Horn Lake.
I went to Horn Lake High. That's South Haven's rival.
Okay. Okay. So impromptu trivia time. Can you give me a hint that will not give it away, but I might be led down the right path?
I have three children with her.
Your well, I mean, all right. So this is actually now it got really tough. Okay. So must be one Kelly Paris, South Haven.
Kelly Parrish is a South Haven High School graduate. Also, my mother, South Haven High School graduate. My father, South Haven High School graduate. And guess who also graduated? We might have discussed this before. With my mother and father from South Haven High School, same year.
We've talked about this. It's some sort of presidential candidate because then we talked about how my dad went to high school with Hillary Clinton.
No, it's not a presidential candidate. Oh. It's an author.
Oh, yeah. It's Grisham?
John Grisham.
Yeah,
right?
There we
John
go. Yeah. I don't know. Well, we talked about it on this on that podcast because we mentioned how your parents went to high school with someone famous. I was like, oh yeah. By the way, my dad in Illinois was in the same high school as then Hillary Rodham. But anyway, so yeah, definitely not a presidential candidate. Continue. Hey, wait, no, actually, and I really don't need to get into your. We do not need 5 minutes, even 3 minutes, I guess, on your background of why you went to Horn Lake and everyone else went to South Haven. But why did that happen?
Well, they're two different places.
Yeah, I understand that those are two different places, but if you're, I guess they just moved over one town. I guess your parents. Okay,
that's exactly what happened. I think the way the story is explained to me, my parents started high school at Horn Lake, but then they built South Haven High School. Both my parents ended up graduating from South Haven High School. Then South Haven and Horn Lake became rivals, and my parents, like when they graduated high school and got married, they just bought a home in Horn Lake. So then my brother and I went to Horn Lake, but my wife, who I did not know when we were in high school, because she's 5 years younger than I am. I didn't meet her until she was in college, but she went to South Haven. Also, she subsequently taught, when she was a teacher, she taught at South Haven High School, and now. Terrence Davis is making everybody over there proud because he is terrific, averaging 16.6 rebounds a game, 4 assists, shooting 42% from three-point range. And don't forget Brian Tyree, who sounds like a Game of Thrones character, doesn't he?
Oh, without a doubt. I want a Photoshop of him taking on the Frozen Dragon. Yes.
Like I told you, okay, Ole Miss basketball player or Game of Thrones character, Brian Tyree. You'd lean toward Game of Thrones character, I think.
100%.
But he's averaging 17.5 points per game and shooting 40% from three-point range. And, like, though a lot of people are looking at this and going, because, listen, the top four scorers on this Ole Miss team right now, Brian Tyree from the North, Terrence Davis, Devontae Shuler, and Blake Henson, they were all on last season's team that went 12-20. So they are not completely relying on the same guys that went 12-20 last season, but they are largely relying on the same guys who went 12-20 last season. And some people are saying, like, this is, when you replace Andy Kennedy with Kermit Davis, this is what you get. I will say that AK deserves some credit for this because when I talked to Kermit in Nashville a few weeks ago when I was working the Ole Miss Middle Tennessee game at Bridgestone Arena, I said, did you know immediately that you were going to be way better than people realize? And he said, well, I knew I inherited two really good SEC guards, and that's a great place to start. AK left me two really good guards, and I knew with those guys I'd have a chance to maybe surprise somebody. And they've surprised everybody. Again, picked last in the SEC, sitting there at 3-0 right now, and I've got them 14th in the top 25-1. And I don't know if they are really the 14th best team in the country, but I do know that they deserve to be there right now, given what they've accomplished. Beat Auburn middle of the week and then go to Mississippi State and beat a good, like legitimate top 20, 25 Mississippi State team. It was a tremendous week for Ole Miss basketball, tremendous week for Kermit Davis. Gonzaga, one at San Francisco late on Saturday. Zags are now 16-2, and KenPom has them as at least a 6-point favorite to win every remaining game. So let me ask you this. You think Gonzaga runs the table, takes a 32-2 record into Selection Sunday?
I think it runs the table in the regular season. I won't go as far as say it runs the table with the league tournament. That just, you know, you bring 2-3 more games into it on a neutral floor. And USF, this was a really fun game. I think this was the best game of Saturday, Parrish. And the final score was not indicative of – this is actually a case for those who don't like margin of victory because they think that sometimes it can be misleading. You had that here. San Francisco was tied with Gonzaga with 3 and change left. It was only a 2-possession game with like 2 and change to go. And then Gonzaga, which did not have Tilly available on the floor because he had fouled out. You know, Zach Norville had a 3 from the top of the key. Brandon Clark had a just studly block. He was awesome. And Gonzaga pulls away and wins. But this was in doubt, no doubt about it. This was Gonzaga's best chance to lose. Now, could it drop at BYU or St. Mary's? Potentially. Even Loyola Marymount's had some goodness to it, San Diego as well. But even, like, if you look at the WCC, which I think can, and I almost am willing to say will, but won't go there just yet, also be a multi-bid league, you got to have the teams that played well in non-conference stand up for themselves once you get to January here, and you're getting some bumps on the road with San Diego, Marymount, and those teams I mentioned. St. Mary's actually isn't rating as well this season as it has in recent years. It would be ironic if St. Mary's, for some reason, won the auto bid down the road here in a year where it doesn't really have the non-conference to validate that, given the way that they've been kept out of the tournament twice over the past, I want to say, 5, maybe 6 years due to weak non-conference plays. San Francisco's a lot of fun. They've got the guy who I think has, and there are college basketball annually, has tremendous names. There are, you could, if you went to up and down every single roster, you'd find at least 40 names that are incredible. But there is no better one, given his name and his game and the fact that he plays for the Dons, than Frankie Ferrari. He was terrific. I want Frankie Ferrari in the NCAA tournament. Bring on all of your Italian car puns. I don't care. The team is a lot of fun to watch. If it plays the way it played for most of the rest of the season against non-Gonzaga teams, San Francisco is going to have accumulated a resume that will be good enough to get them in, even as an at-large. I'm going to say right now, why not? Prediction. I will say San Francisco is in the NCAA tournament. That team is good enough for sure. And also, as a side note, it's been tracking well in the net rankings, which aren't everything, but it was highly ranked early, and it's dropped a little bit, but it hasn't fallen back in a big way. So keep an eye on USF. They are worth a watch, and to me, the second best team in that league.
Okay, a few thoughts here. First, on Frankie Ferrari. Obviously a terrific name. My favorite name in college basketball, Leaky Black. Dude, I love Leaky Black. At North Carolina.
Yeah, it's a name for many businesses, yes. Many occupations, I should say.
It's 100%. Okay, if I said Brienne Tyree, basketball player or Game of Thrones character, you'd maybe lean Game of Thrones character.
You're really going to go here, aren't you? You're going to go here?
If I said rapper or North Carolina Tar Heel, Leaky Black.
Okay, I thought you were going to use a different profession, so thank you.
No, he said like if you heard Future had a new song out, like, hey, have you heard the new Future track? It's Future with Leaky Black. Like, oh, that would make 100% sense.
Yes, it would. I want to hear the Leaky Black mixtape. Yes.
Hey, Leaky Black's got a new mixtape. Hey, did you hear Leaky Black's in a lawsuit with his record label?
That's awesome. He's up there. That's for me. That's definitely top 10. There's a lot of good ones up there. Yes.
I can't believe Leaky Black signed with Def Jam. It's your turn. Let's keep trading these until we run out.
Oh man, I don't. How about this? Next podcast, I'll bring up a few. I don't have it in front of me, and I don't want to take too much time thinking about it. But he is certainly up there because there are a lot. I will say when I do that 1-3 53 every season, like I'm rolling through so many teams, I inevitably just stumble upon a number of incredible names. So I remember this past season specifically hitting up like 12-14. I was like, these are just all incredible. Like, these are just amazing names right now. But I'm drawing a blank at the moment.
Dude, I can't wait to see Luke Black at Coachella. And Luke Black's opening up for Cardi B. Did you hear Leaky Black's opening for Cardi B?
I heard that. Yeah. Should be a good show.
Man.
Better than Foreigner. Yeah, for sure.
I heard Young Dolphin Leaky Black got into it out in L.A.
Sadiq Bey, top 20 for me.
Sadiq Bey is also a good one, but I don't know, man.
Villanova also has, this Colt Swider, that just sounds like a good name. Damir Cosby Roundtree. I mean, it's not like a top 10 name, but that's Damir Cosby Roundtree sounds like an ABA All-Star from 1972, which is a fantastic name.
Colt Swider sounds like a cop.
He does. He sounds like a crooked cop. I'm not trying to assassinate your character, Cole. I'm just saying. Colt Swider sounds like just one of those cops that you don't want to have to run into, you know?
I am Detective Cole Swider. I'm here to see Leaky Black. that would make perfect sense, wouldn't it?
Perfect? I guess. Yeah.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a Detective Cole Swider. I am investigating the murder of Leaky Black. That makes sense. This is Detective Cole Swider calling from Philadelphia PD, investigating the shooting of Leaky Black last night. Would you have 5 minutes to talk? That would work.
Yo, Texas State has a player. I brought up a random team on KenPom. There's a player on Texas State called Trey Lorenz Nottingham. That sounds like the biggest up-and-coming rapper in South London. Like, that's an incredible name. And he plays for Texas State. College basketball never lets down in this regard. Ever. Ever. I'm going to do it one more time. I'm bringing up a random team. Maybe it'll be a letdown, but all right, Charleston Southern. Who's on Charleston Southern right now? Okay. Okay. All right. Flandrous Fleming.
Yeah.
I mean, let's do it one more time. Let's just see if we can get one more. Just total random team. All right, who's on Portland? I'm not feeling good about Portland. I don't feel like Portland's going to have a good one. Josh McSwiggin, I'll take it. I'll take Josh McSwiggin, I guess. There's some other ones. Krishan Clark. Tequila Ferenson. Oh, this is amazing podcasting, by the way. Shout out to the listeners. Hey, I want to hear from the listeners. We both do. We love you, men and women. If there is a particular college basketball player's name active this season, feel free to tweet it at us. We'll try and compile a list. There are so many, though, like truly incredible ones. We've only just started tapping the well. Anyway, what were we talking about? We were talking, Frankie Ferrari in San Francisco. But train has left the station.
What I was talking about was, you know, it's a shame that Tekashi is now facing federal charges. And I just hope it's a wake-up call for Leaky Black.
That's true.
Back to San Francisco. So they're 14-3 right now. We talked earlier about Wofford jumping KenPom from sub 100 into the top 50. Ole Miss has gone from in the 90s to the top 30. San Francisco, big jump from 136 to 45 right now. And so if they hold up throughout the schedule, I do think that they've got a chance to join Gonzaga in the NCAA tournament. They're not going to have these big, big quality wins unless they catch Gonzaga, you know, at the kennel later on the season, and good luck with that. But the computers are going to like them, and they're going to have a lot of wins. You can probably make a case for them on Selection Sunday. We'll see. I mentioned that KenPom's got Gonzaga projected to win every game it plays. I should phrase it differently. They'll be favored in every game they play going forward. Not necessarily expected to win them all, but they'll be favored in every game going forward. There's three other top 40 teams at KenPom that are projected to be favorites in every remaining game they play. You know who they are?
Nevada would be one.
Correct.
Buffalo would be two.
Correct.
Okay.
You'll get the third.
Don't think I'll get the third. Just trying to think. And I'm not cheating. I'm not looking right now. I actually have since closed the KenPom window since we wrapped up our name searching extravaganza. Favored to win every game from here on out. Won't be any major conference team. Gonzaga, Nevada, Buffalo.
Let me stop you. It is a major conference team. That's why I thought that you wouldn't get it.
I find it hard to believe that Duke would be favored to win at Virginia, but is it Duke?
No. Okay. Duke is expected to be an underdog at Virginia.
Yeah, that's. I think that's the right call. It can't be Kansas because Kansas won't be favored at Texas Tech, correct?
Yeah, Kansas is expected to lose multiple games.
Is it really? No, no way. I mean, hey, Villanova, by the way, won again, only Big East undefeated team, but Nova's not going to be favored at Marquette.
It's not Villanova.
Okay. Won't be anyone in the Big Ten. No, it's not. It can't be Tennessee. There's no way. Tennessee?
It's Tennessee.
Get out of here. Really?
They are projected to be a favorite in every game going forward. The Vols are now 14-1. And you mentioned Gonzaga, San Francisco, maybe being the game of the day. Perhaps. I'd also throw Mississippi State Ole Miss in there. And I would throw Tennessee, Florida in there because they were throwing haymakers at each other. And then in the final 6 minutes, Tennessee just pulled away, ends up winning by double digits once again. So they're 14-1 now with 13 double-digit wins. And their 14 wins are coming by an average of 22, 23 points per game. They're killing people, and they're now up to number 5 at KenPom, and they are projected to be a favorite every game that they play going forward, including at Rupp Arena against Kentucky on February 16th.
How about that? Okay. I feel like that will change. Okay, so that's what the projections are in the metric. But I feel like by the time we get to the Tennessee at Kentucky game, do they play at Auburn Parish or no?
They close at Auburn. It's March 9th. Yeah. And they 77-75.
Okay. I think that they will be an underdog at least once, probably twice prior to the NCAA tournament because if they win the SEC tournament, they're going to be favored, obviously. I mean, if they win the SEC regular season, they're going to be favored in every SEC tournament game.
Boy, their last four road games, check this out. At Kentucky, at LSU, at Ole Miss, at Auburn. That ain't easy.
It's not. And they're going to lose at least one of those. And so if they lose early, then it's going to increase the likelihood they'll be an underdog on the back end, either the third or the fourth game there.
All right. Before we get out of here, there's only one game on Monday or Tuesday between two ranked teams, and it's Virginia Tech at Virginia. The Cavaliers moved to 15-0 this weekend, which just crushed Clemson at Clemson. Only two teams have cracked the 60-point barrier against them. And everybody is looking forward to next Saturday's Duke-Virginia showdown at Cameron. I'll be there. I'm looking forward to it. But Virginia could get tested by Virginia Tech. The Hokies are 14-1, and they won at Virginia in overtime last season. So this is going to be a wild week, Virginia. You host Virginia Tech, and then you go on the road to Duke. You think they go 2-0, 0-2, or 1-1, the Cavaliers this week?
I think they'll go 1-1. I still think this is the best team in college basketball. I might even still hold that opinion if they lose against Duke and the game is competitive given the venue. I want to say, this is from memory, Parrish. I want to say that Virginia Tech is the only league loss Virginia has suffered in, like, GP, I'm talking like 29 league games or something like that. It's been, and they picked them off, as you said, at Charlottesville. And then so this is also true then. This one hand feeds the other. That means that last season Virginia won at Duke. I remember watching that game. Asking that team to do that in back-to-back seasons is a bit of a tall task. Given the quality of opponent, I'll say 1-1, but I'll also say this. If Virginia wins these next two, Parrish, I know you've got your rules, but come on. Like, if they do that and are still undefeated, I think you should seriously consider putting them at number one in your rankings and joining forces with me, because I've had the Wahoos one in the power rankings the past 2 weeks.
I would have to consider it. I don't believe I've ever dropped a team from number one without it losing since it took possession of number one. And that's really my argument for still having Tennessee there. Like, when I made Tennessee the number one team in the country, nobody questioned it, you know, given the resume at the time. And all Tennessee's done since then is gone out and beat every team it's played by double digits. Mm. So I just – even though I'm not dumb, you think I can't look at the bodies of work? I mean, God, if you listen to this podcast, you know all I do is just scan resumes via Kindle. Hours a day, right? So, like, I'm for all you Duke fans tweeting me, I am very aware that Duke has at this moment a better resume than Tennessee. But when I moved Tennessee to number one, that was not true. And all Tennessee's done since then has just beat literally everybody by double digits. And so I don't want to punish the number one team in the country that wins every game it plays since it became number one by double digits. And that's always been my philosophy. If you become number one, you're going to stay number one unless you lose a game. But if Virginia goes to 17-0 with a win at Duke, and it would also include a win over Virginia Tech. And what else do they already have on the resume? They've got a win over Wisconsin, a win over Maryland.
On the road. The Maryland game came on the road.
A win over Florida State and then a win at Clemson. I would at least have to consider it, right? I've never done it, but I would – I'll be open-minded about it. I would at least consider it. And because I don't disagree with you in the sense that if somebody wanted to argue Virginia's the best team in the country, I think you can reasonably make that argument.
Jack Salt, by the way, top 30 name, Virginia guy. That's another solid name. Jack Salt sounds like a very low-level appearance in the next Avengers movie. I feel like he's going to factor into the Marvel Cinematic Universe in some sort of way. So shout out to Jack Salt, who hails from down under. Certainly a name to watch out for, I guess. I have no idea what I'm saying. That's going to be a good game.
Excuse me. My name's Detective Jack Salt. I'm here investigating the a murder attempt on Leaky Black. I was wondering if you had 10 minutes to talk to. Maybe that's what the podcast will be going forward. We just take 10 minutes inventing little stories that involve Leaky Black.
The one thing I need to make clear, I don't need this podcast episode going through channels, getting back to Devin Downey, thinking that Leaky Black's the new Devin Downey. You got one Carolina versus another Carolina. That's not what this is, okay? Devin Downey is a great name as well. So we're not – it's just, you know, Leaky Black. It's up there. Parrish has it higher than I do. But Leaky Black to me is a top 10 name regardless.
Just like it because it's set – like if you heard that Best New Rap Artist, one of the nominees was Leaky Black, you'd be like, that makes – like that sounds exactly – That makes sense to me.
Yep.
Like if you were like, man, I don't know whose mixtape is better, Young Dolph's or Black Youngster or Leaky Black. You'd go, maybe Leaky Black. I think I like Leaky Black.
I want to run the Jewels collaboration with Leaky Black in 2019. That's what I want.
RTJ4 is coming out in 2019. I saw Killer Mike tweet that the other day or somebody tweeted. LP might have tweeted. I saw it on Twitter. And Killer Mike's got a Netflix show coming out. Do you see that?
I did, actually. I'm in on that as well. But beyond all other things, I need an RTJ collaboration with Leaky Black. So that's got to happen after the season.
Yeah, like what if the fourth track on RTJ4 has a guest verse from Leaky Black?
North Carolina number one in all the rankings if that happens.
How much you think Leaky Black charges for a guest verse?
I don't know. 150? Something like that? I think that's reasonable.
Gotta be. I think to circle back to Virginia Tech, Virginia, I think if you go 1-1 this week, if you're Tony Bennett, you feel pretty good about it. Like that's a reasonable week. You'd have a win over a fellow top 10 team, and then either way, like if you're beating a top 10 team, if you beat either Virginia Tech or Duke, and then you'd have a loss to a top 10 team, no big deal. But I bet you Tony'd feel different about that if he wins the first one. If you win the first one, then you just want to go take the second one. So I will be going there later in this week. So when we podcast on Friday, at least my half of the podcast will be originating from Durham, North Carolina. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle. He's the legend. Shouts to Larnell. Shouts to Leak Black. And please go subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast via Apple Podcast. Rate it favorably. Like you can just forget about like that whole 15 minutes we spent on the names and then rate it favorably. 5 stars, 9 comments. That's all I'm going to ask. So please do that. We will talk to you again on Wednesday. Till then, take care.